Please help me welcome J. Lauren Norris.
It's amazing when you hear little quotes, quippity quotes from somebody that you think, I want to repeat that. I want to say it exactly like they said it. And sometimes you even diligently go back and look up the quote, or you ask them to repeat it so you can say it again. And sometimes those leaders, those speakers, those coaches, those trainers, those preachers, those teachers, they've used that quote so many times they can give it to you word for word exactly the same. And sometimes they are profound, life-changing kind of quotes. And sometimes they get to be something different than that. That's what I want to talk about in this episode of Leading Leaders. Stay tuned. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast. And if you've been around leadership for any period of time and you've studied under leaders or you've trained as a leader, then you know that there are some certain little quips that we hear, certain little quotes that we hear. One I use often is John Maxwell's quote, "Leadership is influence, nothing more and nothing less." Now, on the bookshelf to my right, there's probably 25 of John Maxwell's 100 plus titles that he's published, and there are a lot of the quotes like "leadership is influence, nothing more and is nothing less," and that appear in every single one of those books. There are other quotes about, you know, the law of the picture. All of those kinds of quips and quotes they're powerful because they basically take a very large idea and they condense it down to something easy to remember. Now, that's also part of the danger. And a lot of characters, movie characters, stage actors, performers of various sorts, they want to create quotable quotes, memeable memes, shareable viral pictures. Why? Well, it's powerful as a form of marketing. If you like something that I say, you like an idea that I have, one of my own originals is, you'll never, ever, 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 never, ever, did I say ever? Never squeeze a pineapple hard enough to get ketchup out of it. Because it's not in there. Now, people who hear me say that, and they take that all by itself, they think, well, that's kind of a duh. I mean, you wouldn't expect to get ketchup out of a pineapple. But if you spend any time coaching with me, then you understand exactly what I mean by that. And when I tell you, I'm not here to write your speech, I'm here to squeeze your pineapple, it redefines our relationship. When you understand what those two quotes mean in context to each other, it's life-changing. Take them out of context of each other, and people might think the metaphor of the pineapple is something inappropriate. I'm not here to write your speech, I'm here to squeeze your pineapple. Keep your hands off my pineapples, might be the way that people perceive that. So I recently heard somebody say, and then someone else repeat it, don't hear my words apart from my spirit. Letter of the law, spirit of the law. I get it, but is it possible? You understand what I'm saying? Sometimes the quote that you use can be taken out of context, and people generally have one of three ways of reacting to a quote. They requote it for you and becomes your word of mouth marketing. It becomes advertising for you. People are like, that's a brilliant idea. Why didn't I think of that myself? And so they say it over and over and over, and they qualify and quantify your expertise and not their own. I mean, theirs by virtue of the fact that they studied under somebody as brilliant as you, obviously, but at the same time, the idea wasn't originally theirs. So it really makes you the expert, not them. But the fact that they're quoting you kind of builds your social clout. I mean, people think, well, if you're being quoted, you must be good at it. My most quoted quote, if you look it up on social media, is, if you don't know where you're going, ask somebody who's been there. It's in reference to mentorship. It's hard to follow a journey all on your own. Now, John Maxwell talks in Leadership about the idea of being a trailblazer. Trailblazers are often the ones that are creating these quotes because they're discovering things that nobody else has. They're doing the risky, crazy stuff that not everybody's willing to do. They're jumping out on a limb and then jumping off the limb or sawing the limb off behind themselves just to discover what's on the other side. And they often come up with these quips and quotes and things that you think, wow, I never really thought about it like that. And they're life-changing quotes. But then there are those quips and quotes that you put out there and people intentionally misquote them. They misquote them to mischaracterize you. They misquote them to very dangerously malign you, to separate your words from your spirit or your intent, to separate you from the quality of who you are by simply misquoting you. I listened to a very long interview between a politician who recently ran for president and a psychologist. Both of them, if I said their names, you'd know exactly who I'm talking about. I don't want the context of their worldviews to taint this conversation, though. What I discovered in listening was the strategy that a very particular group of journalists used to create a circumstance where the politician would quote something that was, in the context of a two-hour conversation, absolutely true. And that there was really no other way to answer the question except the way it was answered. And that psychological mindset, that framework, it was developed intentionally. The journalist went to a lot of foundational work, even in the building of the relationship between themselves and the politician, to create the environment where the question could be asked and the answer would be given. You know, it's kind of like when you talk to a judge or you talk to an interrogator. And I don't just mean a law enforcement person who's pulled you over because you've gotten a speeding ticket. I mean, if you've been taken into the back room and the window is a mirror and you know there are people on the other side watching, interrogation methods that have been created and crafted, they intentionally set you up because they already know the answer to the question. They just want you to give it. Or sometimes they have an answer they expect to get out of you, and they will play with your mind until they trap you into answering it. This particular journalist did this to this particular political candidate and then took it back to the media and parsed out the answer itself so that the candidate was caught saying exactly the words they wanted them to say in exactly the frame of reference they wanted them to say it. But if you'd asked that question as directly as is presumed it was asked, it wouldn't have gotten the same answer. See, there's a lot of misquoting that's intentional. We've seen it over the last four or five election cycles where enormous headlines say, so-and-so said such-and-such, and immediately their campaign is off-rope. It's done. It's over. They're finished. Why? Well, because the world looks at them and says, well, if they said that, they must also believe this. And if they believe this, then I got nothing to do with them. And so that one misquote may be that they misheard something that you as the leader said. It may be that they heard it and intentionally want to twist it because they disagree with you on other things. Or it may be that their inability to hear what you said consists within their own intellectual capacity, their own worldview, their own preconceived notions, their own pre-existing biases. And so what you said may be exactly the words you intended to say, but what they heard meant something different. And see, that's sometimes about the words you said, and it's sometimes about the way the listener heard it. But those quotable quotes, I mean, we do them on purpose. As communicators, as leaders, we try to condense an idea down to a small, consumable, usable part. And when we do that, the intent is that people will take that idea, carry it with them, regurgitate those words in their own head until they get into their subconscious mind. They'll regurgitate them or repeat them in the audience, or the world around them, so that our influence and notoriety and quotability gets higher and higher and higher. And the more often we're quoted, the more credible we seem. But if they're going to misquote you, is that good or bad? Well, there's one other way that people often use our quotes. Let me share a couple of quotes with you, though, really quick. So this little book is called The Quotable Politician. page 30 and 31. I just want to share four little quips idea. Now, these are intentional quotes. These are quotes that were given perhaps to the media, perhaps in the middle of a campaign, perhaps just for giggles in the middle of a conversation. Here you go. Page 30. This is Oscar Levant, American pianist, composer, and actor from 1906 to 1972. You ready for this? The only difference between the Democrats and the Republicans is that the Democrats allow the poor to be corrupt too. Interesting statement. Here you go. This is from Nikita Khrushchev, former prime minister of the USSR from 1894 to, lived from 1894 to 1971, didn't rule that long. Politicians are the same all over. They promise to build bridges even where there are no rivers. Henry Kissinger, former U.S. Secretary of State, 1923, as of the writing of this book, still alive. I'm not sure that he is now. 90% of politicians give the other 10 a bad reputation. 90% of the politicians give the other 10 a bad reputation. All right, the last two. History is replete with proofs from Cato the Elder to Kennedy the Younger that if you scratch a statesman, you find an actor. But it's harder and harder in our time to tell government from show business. James Thurber, cartoonist and humorist, 1894 to 1961. And the title of the book that they quoted that in, How to Tell Government from Show Business. Imagine that. All right, last one. This is also Oscar Levant. I once said cynically of a politician, he'll double-cross that bridge when he comes to it. He'll double-cross that bridge when he comes to it. Now, think about what he's really saying. What he's really saying is, you can't trust him anyway. Whatever he said today, when it comes up again, he's going to change his direction. There was a particular candidate, it's been about 20 years ago now, that they actually called him flip-flop. Because it didn't matter what the decision was on Monday, when the political winds changed, when the mob changed, when the crowd changed their opinion of what he had said, his opinion changed as well. All right. Now, it's one thing to hear a great quote and repeat that quote over and over again, giving credibility to the person who said it, even if the quote is silly. See, I grew up on quotes like, the rich get rich and the poor go broke and it's the rich's fault. And so for many, many years, I didn't want to be rich. I wanted nothing to do with it. And I can tell you, even to this day, there's still subconscious things that I struggle with when I say, here's what I charge for a client. And I know one of the number one sales techniques is once you put your sales price out there, shut your mouth. Don't negotiate. Don't bat an eye. Don't think twice. Don't undersell yourself. Don't try to sell your books, qualities, services, virtues, not your own, not the company you represent. Don't try to sell those out of your own pocket, because if you're looking at it through what you can afford, not what your client can afford, what you value, not what your client values, you're not going to sell anything. And yet, that rich get rich, poor go broke sits deep inside of me. And the minute I give my price, I often immediately back up. I don't see my own worth, my own value. Why? Because the quotable quote has been in my life for 45 years. That quote has not just been off my tongue, but it's been in my ear. It's gotten deep enough into my life and my subconscious mind that I sometimes, even though I disagree with the statement philosophically, politically, emotionally, morally, I think the statement is wrong. It's a manipulation intentionally created. And yet I still battle with it because it got into my subconscious mind because I heard it repeated so many times. And here's the third way people deal with your quotes as a leader. They believe them. They believe them. And I don't just mean believe them like, oh, that was a great quote. I think I can remember so-and-so said that. And I could say that again and say, well, so-and-so said that. And if you believe the credibility of the so-and-so, well, then surely what they said is true. I heard that quote most often from my mother. Pretty hard in the first 10 years of life to contradict what your parents are telling you. It's really hard when you're 20 to forget that that's deep in your subconscious, or when you're 30, or when you're 40, or when you're 50. And you make decisions based on those quotable quotes. Here's another one I heard my mother say. You wouldn't buy a car without test driving it. You wouldn't buy a horse without riding it first. Why would you marry a woman? Yep, heard it when I was young. Believed it. Lived it out. Those can be life-changing quotes. Those can be life-changing words. They can change a lot about the who that you are and the who that you become. And that's exactly my point. See, as a leader, we often forget that the quotes that we use, whether we've quoted them from somebody else because they're clever, or we've intentionally crafted them word for word, emotion for emotion, piece for piece, part for part. We've worked diligently to create a quote that others will want to say because it sounds cool, it sounds clever, it's got perfect rhythm and rhyme, it uses the right words of the day. And we forget that some people don't hear those words as a quotable quote, as a meme that you might see on Facebook. They hear them as advice. They hear them as something I should make decisions in my life based on. And they do. And they change relationships. They change careers. They change objectives. They change directions in their life. Not every leader wants to be a transformative leader. Every leader wants to see that what they've studied, what they've researched, what they've invested in, what they've invested themselves in, the pain that they've lived through, the solutions that they've found, that those solutions save the lives and benefit the quality of life for other people. That's what every leader wants. That's why we desire to have and increase our influence. What we don't want, though, is that the quote that we said on Tuesday because we were really upset about something else becomes the lifestyle for someone to live through every day of their life. Not when they're upset, not when they're having a bad day, not when everything has gone wrong over the last 90 days. And so part of my caution to you leaders, to communicators, pastors, teachers, preachers, I don't care who you are. If you're in the public and you're being quoted, if you desire to be a public figure, if you desire to be a teacher, guard your words as closely as you guard your inner circle, because both of them will redefine, redirect, reshape your destiny. Your future will be determined by the five people you hang around with. Gee, where have we heard that before? I think it was Think and Grow Rich. I think it was Napoleon Hill. I think he said something like, the five books that you read and the five people you hang around with will determine the outcome of your life. That's a pretty powerful quote if it's true. If the five books that you've read most recently and the five people that you hang out with are going to shape your life, that's going to make a big difference. I remember listening to a teaching by Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen. Those are the guys, by the way, that sold, I don't know, some 90 million books of their very first book they wrote together called Chicken Soup for the Soul. And there were bemoaning the fact that they hadn't broken into the $100 million earning class yet. They were upset that they hadn't broken that $100 million mark. Now, that's been a dozen years or so ago anyway. But in this conversation, Jack Canfield said, I remember going to Tony Robbins and we said, Tony, why is it that we can't get past that $100 million mark? And Tony said, well, who are you hanging out with? It was his first question. It was his first response. And Jack and Mark both said, well, we hang out with millionaires. I mean, everybody we know owns lots of businesses and properties and things of that nature. They're all millionaires, multimillionaires, tens, fifties, hundreds of millions of dollars. And he said, well, that's the problem. They are where you are. They don't know what's next. If you want to increase your net value, your net worth, your income, start hanging out with billionaires. They'll challenge you to be better than you are today. Brendan Burchard literally went from borrowing money from his girlfriend, doing his homework on her bed. Watch his own story. He'll tell you. He went from broke to redefining his life. He's an intelligent guy. He's a sharp guy. He's worth tens of millions today, if not more. very successful in what he does, incredible coaching programs, has been a consultant that's been paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for a single day of mind work with people. He's good. He's very good at what he does. But he'll tell you early on, he didn't have that worldview. That's not where he grew up. That's not the kind of people that raised him up. It was when he started hanging out with people like that. He changed the circle of friends, which changed his conversation, which changed his quotable quotes, the things he repeats inside his head and in front of a camera, in front of a microphone. And when he changed his conversations and he changed his circle of friends, he changed his life. And I'm telling you right now, as a leader, there are things that you say. There are quotes that you've quoted from somebody else, quotes that you've crafted yourself very cleverly. And you need to understand the impact they're having on your life. Because some people are requoting them, and it's raising your social status and your social score and your ability to influence people by volume. And some people are misquoting them intentionally to malign you, to draw you down, to pull away your power, to completely take you off track, to hurt your feelings and make you quit. And some people, they've taken those quotes to mind. They've taken those quotes to heart. They've taken those quotes to be concrete, foundational anchors in their life. And whether the quote was actually true or it wasn't, whether it was meant to be funny at the time that you said it or just clever, or you never really thought through the deep philosophical, psychological, theological aspects of what you said, you just, well, that sounds good. I think I'll say it. And I'm not going to call out any of those because there's a lot of them. There's a lot of them, especially in the preaching world, where people say things that they think are funny and people repeat them. And I listen to them and go, that is a tragic untruth. I'm not trying to call anybody out for that. I am saying, as a leader, you're responsible for the words that you say, especially if you intend to influence and teach and train and transform lives, because every word that comes out of your mouth will be judged, not only by people, but eventually in eternity. Every word is being stored up, just like every tear. And they will come back, and you will likely hear them again. For that reason, guard your tongue. In fact, there's an old, really old dude named James. James said, look at the size of a ship in the ocean compared to the size of the rudder that changes the very direction of that ship to cast it ashore or send it out to sea. That's the tongue, the rudder that redirects everything. Guard your words as much as you guard your inner circle, because the books you read, the people you hang out with, and the words you say, those will shape your future. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast for Tell It Like It Is TV. Have a blessed day.
Lauren is a master teacher on storytelling, and I learned so much. I'm really going to have to sit down and go back through everything, and I think I might have to have some more coffees with Lauren, but it was totally worth my time, and I really highly recommend it if you're looking to grow your ministry, grow your business, grow your career. Lauren will serve you well.
Thank you. Subscribe now for our extensive video library of leadership lessons promoting faith, family, and freedom.